make an exception.
That's cool.
Yeah. Thanks for taking the time to get on this with me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'll do a intro and just kind of introduce you and talk about what you do, and then we'll just kind of keep it free form. I have my handy dandy little bell. So if you say anything and you're like, oh, didn't want to say that, or like, let's walk that back, I can ring the bell. Editor knows to edit that part out, and nice. You're good to go.
Everyone has like a different trigger for their editor.
Yeah, I used to like slam on the table. Like I didn't find a good one until the bell.
I like the bell.
It's a good one. It rings a little bit longer. I tried a dog whistle. Like I got a dog whistle app. And I was like, oh, this will show up on the mic, but no one can hear it.
Oh.
But it doesn't show up on the mic. So. Oh.
The mic is not a dog.
I wish it was. I thought it would hear it, but I guess not.
That's amazing. Cool. I have a 3 o'clock hard stop on Eastern time. I don't know where you
perfect.
Are.
Yeah, that works. So I figured it'd be about 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah, perfect. I just have to pick up the kids.
Sounds good. Yeah, that's the downside of being on Pacific, is that we're way out there.
Yeah. I'm already almost done.
I wish I was you.
I wish I could start my day Pacific time and then just an hour later be on Eastern time. And
see, all my clients are on Eastern, so I started about 6 a.m. my time, and I go until about 5 or 6 my time.
Right, so you're just torturing. You live on both.
Yeah, at least on Eastern, I don't know what the excuse is. All right. Anyways, let's get started. Confirm just pronunciation. Make sure I'm not butchering it. Val Geisler.
That's right.
Perfect. That's what I thought, but I wasn't sure. And fixmychurn.com. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, cool.
All right, here we go. Hello, this is Keith, and welcome to another edition of Data Beats Opinion. I'm here today with Val Geisler from fixmychurn.com. In a single sentence, she is absolutely amazing at customer retention, customer communication, and by the name of her site, Fixing SaaS Apps Churn, everything from email to support copy to everything in between. And I am super happy to have you on the call with us.
Well, that's very kind and a really nice intro, Keith. I am a firm believer that data beats opinion, so I was happy to take this time.
I really think that data, especially in the fields that we are, which is customer acquisition, customer retention, anything that is dealing with things at scale, you have to understand your numbers and you have to understand what they mean.
Yeah.
And that's the crazy thing that always gets me, is that so many people just don't have a good sense of what they should be measuring, let alone how they should be measuring it.
Yeah, I mean, I think data is really important, and I believe that it should be both quantitative and qualitative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't, I live in the world of email, and so if all you do is look at open rates and click rates and conversion rates on email campaigns, you end up creating email campaigns that work really well for you, but over time don't work for your customers. Mm-hmm. And so you have to marry the qualitative with the quantitative, and you also have to be willing to try things that will fail.
Right.
In order to have that failing as data, right?
Yeah,
it's all just information.
Yeah, and to go out into left field and say like, okay, this is something we've never tried before. Are people going to respond to it or not? Because you don't know until you try it. One of the things that gets asked me a lot is like, what KPIs should I be looking at to improve my marketing? And I'm like, nothing. KPIs are a judge of how well you're doing, but they don't show you any outliers. They don't show you what you should do next because everything's averaged out.
Yeah.
And especially when we're looking at customer retention, churn and stuff like that, like you have no idea what the problem is. All you see is a number, this churn number. And then you're like, what should I do with it?
The one question that consistently goes unanswered on my intake form when people want to work with me, they have a fairly long application. And one of the questions is, what percentage of your revenue is driven by email?
No
Almost everyone writes, I don't know, NA. they put like an asterisk there just to, because it's a required question. Mm-hmm. So they, everybody bypasses that question. Nobody knows what percentage of their revenue is attributed to email.
Wow.
And yet they all know what percentage their churn is. Mm-hmm. And they know, you know, what their customer lifetime value, and right. they know all these other numbers that everyone talks about, but they haven't dug into what
Why?
All of that means.
Right.
And like, where, okay, so you have a 10% customer churn and you want it to be 7. Well, what do you know about where your revenue comes from? Mm-hmm. and how many, you know, your customer lifetime value, but do you know how many times that customer has purchased from you? You know, mm-hmm. is that, whether it's, because I work with both SaaS and e-commerce, really anyone who's focused on monthly recurring revenue. So e-commerce subscription models, mm-hmm. And then SaaS, it's built in. But, you know, if they're looking at what is, how many months is somebody sticking around, or how many purchases has a customer made? Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily just like average order value in the world right. of e-commerce, or you know, number of months they've been a customer, like, you know, that long lifetime value. I think that it's really about like, when are they leaving and what does that cliff look like? And how can we shorten that cliff? Because
right.
if all you're doing is tackling that churn percentage, it's going to be really challenging. But if you look at all the other factors that go into that and start tackling those individual mm-hmm. little things, then over time, you see that churn number go down.
Right. And then it goes back to, I think there's a part of like, one of the reasons that they focus on the churn number or that average lifetime value or whatever is because it's an easy number that they can plug into something like Barometrics or Segmetrics and instantly get that number, right? It's something that any platform instantly reports on, but it's not the valuable number. That's your marker of where you're at. But like you said, how many people come from your email list? How long are people on your email list before yeah. they convert? Like,
And are people who are converting longtime customers, are they even still on your email list? Like, did they unsubscribe right. at a certain point? Another one that I think about is like, your successful customers, how many, on average, how many tickets do they send in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they noisy customers? Are they quiet? You know, those kinds of, those numbers are there. You have to do some digging and you might have to do some like mathing in there. But I think it's important to look at how all those things tie together.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, customer success isn't just let's get our queue down and answer all of our tickets and make sure everyone's taken care of. But then how does that correlate to other areas of the business as a whole, and
right.
particularly churn?
Yeah. And I think that especially when a business is younger, those numbers that are aggregates, churn, lifetime value, are so easily swayed by kind of the day-to-day or the month-to-month, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you look at something, so I just had a call with someone and they were looking at their average lifetime value and they're like, you have an average lifetime value of $1,100. That means people stay on for 10 months. Why do they quit after 10 months? And I was like, well, if you actually look at the data, they're not quitting after 10 months. You have some people on here that are been on for 3 years, but you have a lot of people who have canceled in the first month. So that's, so you're looking at the average,
yeah.
right? You look at the aggregate and you get one story, but once you start digging into, okay, what's the distribution of that? Then you start saying, this is telling us a completely different story. The people who love us, but it's hard to get over that first hump,
yeah.
right? So that's the kind of stuff that I think you need an expert like yourself or someone who's been around the block with this kind of stuff, because it's not something that you understand and it's not something that people teach.
Well, and it's that outside perspective too, that mm-hmm. sometimes you are too in the weeds and looking at that number and thinking like, oh, this is terrible. What mm-hmm. are we going to do about it? But when you have somebody who can say like, wait a second, let's look at this. You know, again, and I have people come to me all the time who are like, it's really bad. Like, we aren't doing anything with email, and I don't really know. Like, we haven't talked to our list in forever, and I'm so embarrassed to even tell you that. I'm like, hey, you're the third person this week who's told me that.
Yep.
So, you know, it's sometimes it's helpful to just have that outside perspective of somebody who has seen these things come up in time after time, and then knows kind of how to address it and like what works and what doesn't.
Yeah. And this has always been my kind of reason that I recommend consultants, and because the advantage that a consultant has is they've seen this exact same problem in 20, 40, 100 different places, right? Mm-hmm. This is not a new issue that they're coming into and have to figure out. They're like, this is why this is happening. These are the things you need to look at. And it gives you, as a company, such a jump start into, oh, this is how I'm going to start fixing this problem, instead of trying to figure it out yourself for months, reading blog posts that are honestly usually pretty whitewashed. Right? They don't talk about the horrible stuff. And the same, they really are. Like,
and I always think consultants, we're like a dumpster fire breed. Like, we're attracted to those like big flaming hot fires, and like we want to have an impact on them. We want to at least get them down to like a sizzle. You know, roast some marshmallows and call it a day. But you know, what's fun about working with someone on, you can work together on a very short-term basis. It's not a lifelong commitment. You know, right. It's a, however long the term is that the consultant has seen success with, and then being able to turn around some real results in a short period of time, and then maybe go away for a while and come back. A lot of people I work with, I see again 6 or 9 months later to, you know, pull the data, see what we, look at what we did, see how it performed, you know, what worked, what didn't, and then what adjustments do we need to make to that? And then what else do we need to work on? What does that data tell us now? What right. other opportunities are there? So, and that's, I think it's a really fun way to have relationships, and also for small SaaS companies to be able to scale up a little bit. Like, you know, you can scale your business without hiring someone full time.
Exactly. It literally is. It's hiring an expert for a short period of time to be laser focused on what you want to accomplish. And I actually love the fact that you said that consultants were attracted to dumpster fires, because I found the exact same thing. It's like, if a company's going smoothly, there's nothing interesting to do. It's right. kind of like rubber stamping, cookie cutter stuff. But when someone has no idea what's going on, everything's on fire, you're like, oh, this is going to be fun. You get to dive in and do all this stuff because you know you can have an instant impact.
Yeah. And that's why, like, with consultants who offer retainers, typically you have like the project fee, and then the retainer is much lower. It's more of a maintenance situation where, you know, maybe they're going in and pulling reports for you and looking at numbers, making suggestions, but it's not the volume of work that a shorter project is. So, you know, that's absolutely, you should expect that from a consultant, right? That the, a retainer is not this kind of, we're doing the same thing every single month. Because eventually hopefully those problems go away with a little bit of work.
Right. Yeah. So it's interesting, you know, we're talking about data, we're talking about churn, because churn is probably the most argued about metric ever created. Like, everything, every single company, I think, measures churn in a different way.
Yeah.
And I know that there was a lawsuit against Netflix a number of years ago now, but they were calculating churn one way, and they were sued by their investors because they said that they had calculated too loosely.
Oh.
And they won the lawsuit because they were able to prove that there's no one right way to calculate churn. But I'm wondering, like, is that, there are metrics that we look at that are not set in stone, that there is no specific way of calculating them, especially when we look at cohorts. So it's like, okay, we're looking at lifetime value. Do we only look at people who have been on until they cancel, or like the people who are still there? Like, there's so many ways to slice and dice that data.
Yeah.
How do you kind of, because I know that you probably have customers or clients that come to you and say like, well, I thought that the number would be more like this, or this is what this system says. Like, how do you kind of bring together all these different views of what data should look like?
Well, just like you said, there's no one right way to calculate churn. I think it's important to go into the relationship with, my mindset is always, what are you currently working with? Mm-hmm. Even people will ask me like, well, what email platform should we be on? Like, what's the one that will work the best? And I always tell them the best one is the one that you'll actually use. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the one, and certainly there are differences between the platforms and capabilities and all that. And we can make a few recommendations, but ultimately I'm going to give you three or four that are the same as far as features and things go. The one you use is what works. And so mm-hmm. for me, the way you calculate churn is likely that's the number that you want to see change. Right. And so I want to know, how do you make that calculation? And what goes into that? Mm-hmm. What do you consider part of, like, this is a formula, not just a static number. And so what are the pieces of the formula? What is X and Y and Z?
Right.
And it gets you to, because everybody's X, Y, and Z are different. So I always just ask, like, how are you calculating it? And then if they're, if they're calculating churn on a monthly basis versus an annual basis, then we can talk about like, okay, well, let's measure it on an annual basis, right?
Right.
Like, let's carry that out. Let's not be so concerned about that monthly churn, because ultimately, especially in the world of SaaS, like, let's get them through a year, right?
Right. Exactly.
Because then those are the customers who are around for a very long time.
Yeah. So that's interesting. That's a, and so just what you said right there, like, let's look at churn at a yearly basis instead of monthly. I don't think that anyone who's not involved in that already knows that, or it's definitely not said anywhere. Right. Like, I remember
about
the annual churn, and that's the number you need to be looking at, especially in SaaS. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that there are a lot of those things that people, no one writes about it. It's interesting because the people in the know, because I know about it because we had to do a lot of research when we were building out our churn functionality. Okay. Right. But as far as like our customers that come to us, they're like, oh, looking at our monthly churn or all the articles we read, most of them referred to monthly instead of annual. Mm-hmm. And so I bet you see a lot of areas where the common knowledge is not the real knowledge that people need to be looking at.
I think what actually happens is that some expert talks about churn and they don't clarify monthly or annual. And so then whatever you think it is the way you read it, right? So
right.
Lincoln Murphy is quoted as having said that a good SaaS churn is 7%.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know that he, in that article, talks about annual consistently, but all you hear is that little quote, you start to think that that's a good measure of churn on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's like that you see things through the lens that you have. And it's also just not getting clarification. It's like, I have two kids, and when I was pregnant with my second one, somebody told me that, you know, the person who said that a pregnancy is 40 weeks, this doctor that said that, he never clarified if it was 40 weeks from the first day of the last period or the last day.
Right.
So that's a 7-day difference. And so all, you know, everybody's always like, oh, 40 weeks and you're still pregnant. Well, you're late. It's like, late for what, first of all? but also, like, there was no specificity around when those weeks were started to be counted.
Right.
And so most people default to the beginning, but he never said. And so he could have meant the end. So I think, you know, we have to ask more questions, quite honestly. I think the default is to just pull the numbers that like Segment or Mixpanel or whatever gives you.
Shows you at the beginning.
Ask any other questions.
And that's the thing, is because most of the tools default to a month because they think, okay, month is what people want to see. And so when someone says, look at your churn, you log into Mixpanel or Barometrics or Segmetrics or whatever, and you look at the churn and it says 11% for this month, you're like, that's my churn.
Yep.
But you, and it's interesting because they're,
oh my God, that's so bad.
Like, I know, right? Bad. Like, but you, because you don't look at that's what the tool tells you. and you don't know any better because there was no clarification. I'm reminded, I went to the I went to a yearly checkup or something in Japan, went, and they said, do you brush your teeth enough? That's the question on the form. And I'm like, and it was yes or no. Do you brush your teeth enough? I'm like, well, I don't know. That's why I'm asking you. And I went to them. I was like, hey, I have a question. Like, what is enough? And they tried to explain what it means in Japanese, like what the word enough means, because they thought I didn't understand Japanese. I'm like, no, it's not a set number. Like, should I be brushing my teeth 4 times a day, 6 times a day? Like, what should I be doing here?
All of a sudden you're nervous about, like, I don't know, am I?
But I think I'm the only person who's ever asked. I told that to my wife and she's like, yeah, no one, everyone just says yes. Like, just say yes. But yeah. Because we're data oriented, because our professions are wrapped around data and understanding what is the underlying reason for these things that are happening, we want to be more specific. We have to be mm-hmm. more specific.
Yep. And I find that even when I do, like when I'm looking on that qualitative data side and I'm doing customer interviews, I ask why a lot. I dig in with the customers. Mm-hmm. I don't just ask the 12 questions on my list and move on to the next one.
Right.
Sometimes I don't even ask all of those questions because I'm busy digging into one. Because that's the most interesting one. It's going to give me the best story, the best information. So I really think that it's about asking why a lot and digging in, not just having the data, but understanding the data.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
And that's the other thing too. And in emails, a lot of people like guiltily admit to me that they, we have customer IO, but we only use like a fifth of its capability, if that, you know, like it's where we could do so much more with it. We just don't know. Everybody admits that, for whatever platform they're on.
Right.
And then, and it's like, well, okay, let's dig into what you have available to you, better understand your tools and the information it has for you and know, a lot of times I end up like helping people save. I guess I cause churn in other softwares because they had their redundancies, just because they don't understand their tools and they don't ask why. Like, why do we have both of these?
Right. Well, you're building your customer base. You say, you need to quit a customer IO, and then you go up to Colin and say, hey, Colin, you know you should really hire me to fix your churn.
I've noticed have you had any churn problems lately? Because I just had a sense you might. Yeah, I think that. It's a brilliant growth strategy. Thanks.
Exactly. So I think a lot of people would be curious to know, what are some of the things that you do look at when you are starting to look at someone's churn? And let's say someone has a churn problem. What are some of the questions you ask and what are some of the things that you're looking at to try and solve this? And you had mentioned one, how many people from your email, how much of your revenue is from email?
Yeah. And in my case, I'm looking at email. So how often are you emailing your list? Mm-hmm. What are you emailing them about? And in a lot of cases, we're looking at other factors too, like how often are you talking to your customers outside of support? And, and what are your support turnaround times like? And what are your transactional emails look like? How are you building a relationship with your customers? Because ultimately, we have a lot of choice in this world. Mm-hmm. And even in the world of software, even if you feel like I have something that nobody else has, Barometrics, for example, nobody else does like open public metrics like they do. And yet they have, quote, competitors. There are alternatives. There are things other people are using.
Right.
There are other customers for them to acquire. So, you know, they don't have the lock on it and nobody does. And it isn't until you build a relationship with your customers, because it's really hard. It's simple to walk away from a piece of software, right? Mm-hmm. It's easy to say, I'm Barometrics. I'm going to go use something else.
Right.
It's really hard to say to Corey or Josh or any other member, an individual at Barometrics, hey, I'm not going to use this anymore and I'm going to go use this other thing.
Right.
It's hard when you have a relationship, even if you only feel like you have a relationship, even if it's through automated emails that introduce a team or are written quote from Corey, you know? So I think it's really important to build that kind of brand affinity, because to me, like, that's the ultimate measure of how we can reduce customer churn long-term, is that what is your relationship like with your customers and how are you talking to them, if you're talking to them at all?
Right. And that's, it's interesting that that personality side of thing and that, that real talking, because that is something that I see a lot of places try, a lot of places don't do, a lot of places try and don't do very well. I know Mixpanel does, Pat Neelix, I believe, is the person who every single automated email is from him. And it's interesting because now I know Pat's name, right? My favorite one was Lars Lofgren. He used to work at Kissmetrics. And then he, one of my clients was saying, hey, I'm thinking about hiring this guy. Do you know Lars? I'm like, oh yeah, of course I know Lars. And and I thought back, I was like, I actually don't know Lars, but he's been in my email every single day for the last 3 years. So I feel like I've known him. Right.
Yeah. And when when I was at ConvertKit, I was running the email marketing for them. It was a very meta job. And I signed all of the emails. Well, the from name was Val at ConvertKit, and then all the emails were signed from me. They were written as though I were writing to you individually. And for the longest time after I left, I was Val from ConvertKit. That was how people referred to me. And if I introduced myself to someone and they didn't really know who I was, I would say I used to work at ConvertKit, and they're like, oh, you're Val from ConvertKit.
Yep, yep.
And to the point that Nathan, the actual founder, would go to conferences and he'd say, I founded ConvertKit, and people would say, no, that was someone named Val. he loved telling that story.
That is great.
It's a testament to that relationship building, that people felt like they knew me and had a relationship with me and saw me as part of the company. So they, it wasn't that they just liked the software. They liked me, which is great, but you know,
And it's interesting. You mentioned like disappointing Josh, right? From Barometrics. And it's one of the reasons I still have a Barometrics account, even though Segmetrics does 90% of the stuff. I mean, we're a different focus, but we have the same data, but I still use Barometrics because I like Josh and I want to support something that he's doing. Because,
I've had teams I've worked with where they've built in a like downgrade option to their whatever they have available for people who have said like, "Hey, I'm not really using this. I want to keep supporting you. I might come back in the future. Do you have a way for me to kind of like put things on hold?"
Right.
So they'll have like a $10 a month kind of downgrade option, which is really awesome and a testament to that relationship. Plus, I don't want to piss off Josh.
he's got the Alabama mafia down there. So
that's right.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So I guess we talked about email. We talked about that building that relationship with people over time and building that relationship with the product. And that's something I've always been very gung-ho on. I know a lot of, especially internet marketers, product people, personality brands and stuff, they always say, I would give up every single dollar in my bank account, but just don't take the list away, right?
Yeah.
Because it's really this part of building, once you have these evangelists, these people who have a connection to you, really there's nothing more valuable for your business than that.
Yeah.
And then what, I guess you kind of, that's kind of the basis of what you do when you're looking at fixing churn stuff, is how do you build that relationship? How do you get people to be able to not only help themselves, but to build that connection through that onboarding flow?
Yeah. One of my favorite metrics to look at is replies. And of course I always get the pushback, like, our support team can't handle any more tickets. Like, we don't need more replies. Replies are a good thing. Replies to your emails open up a conversation that wouldn't have otherwise existed.
Yeah.
People don't know what they don't know. And they sometimes don't even know what to ask, but they're going to reply to an email and say, oh, by the way, I was thinking about this thing the other day, or I had this problem. And they tell you what's going on with them. And you can save an entire account from one reply to an early onboarding email.
Right.
And I think it's really important to look at those conversations that are happening. Know what your reply rate is on emails, and then what emails are getting the highest replies, and doing more of that. Like, let's do more of building connection and community. And that conversation, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting because there is this line, I think, of when you want to do things that don't scale and when you want to do things that do scale. And it's very difficult because that line always feels like it's moving. We actually found out recently that we had accidentally stopped the kickoff calls, the onboarding calls for a large portion of our customer base. And I was like, I was wondering why we're not getting as many calls. And I like, oh, we got to just turn this on for everyone. So now, I mean, I'm on 8 calls a week, 10 calls a week, something like that. It's like, it's a lot of calls, but every one of them is completely worth it because A, it's building that relationship. B, it is getting that feedback and solving those problems and helping people get set up. And yeah, and the numbers work for themselves. Every time we get on those calls, those are the people who stay on.
I think there's a lot of crossover between e-commerce and SaaS. And like, we can learn from each other. And it's one of the fun things about working in both industries is that I can bring what I learned in e-commerce to SaaS and vice versa. And the conversation in e-commerce is largely around the things you need to do to build your brand are not scalable. They are, you know, Chewy sending a handwritten card to new customers. So I hit the, it was after my like 2 month, so my second order of a subscription with Chewy.com. I hit my second order and I got a handwritten card in the mail from them. That's not scalable. That's a person sitting down and writing a card. It's having those one-to-one calls. I've been in customer interviews for my clients and the customers say like, wow, no one else asks me about me. Like, you guys really care about your customers. And they mean you guys that like I'm representing that brand, you know?
Right.
So even just doing those customer interviews creates that loyalty and affinity for your brand.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's those things that don't scale that are so important to do. What ConvertKit, we found a way to scale sending t-shirts to, you know, we had this like onboarding checklist. So we could go through the app and make sure you were properly onboarded in the app. And if you completed the checklist, you got a t-shirt. So we use startup threads and there's ways to scale those kinds of things. But then you could also just randomly mail someone. Like, I know Nathan would go on Twitter and say like, hey, I found this box in my closet of like 20 t-shirts. Anybody want one? And then he would, you know, manually package up a bunch of t-shirts and send them out.
Yeah.
That's work, but man, that does so much for
that's
a brand.
That's what we've been finding. Part of our onboarding package is we send everyone a free t-shirt and a little welcome email. And we actually do it as a complete surprise. So we actually sleuth out their address and then we send it to them. Because for me, there's one thing if you're expecting something and one thing if something arrives completely random. So we send out a handwritten thing and a free t-shirt to everyone who signs up that we can find their address on.
So. Nice. Yeah, I know our friend Nick D likes to send books and as you know, there's little things that you can do that create a connection. Every time somebody picks up that book, they think of him. Every time somebody puts that t-shirt on, they think of you guys.
Yeah. And it shows a I guess classiness.
Yeah.
I think would be a good word. I was working back in the consulting days. I had a call with Danielle Laporte. It was just a pitch call. We were just saying, hey, this is what we do. This is what we'd like to work on. The next day, I got a copy of her hardbound book in the mail. I didn't ask for it. I didn't even know how she got my address, but she sent it next day to Japan. Whoa. I got it next. I was like, what in the world? And it was signed from her. And it's like, I hope we get to do something amazing together. I still have it on my bookshelf. And it's just like, it was the classiest thing that anyone had ever did. And just, it blew my mind that this was how much she cared about that relationship.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And
then, you know, there's AI coming out that makes some of these things, you know, a little bit more scalable. Mm-hmm. I know that I've used Postable in the past for sending cards, and yep. they look kind of handwritten. So, you know, there are options there. Yeah. I think Bond, I don't know if Bond even still exists, but where it's a machine that actually uses a pen and will, you know, you write in the computer what you want it to say, and it'll write out with an actual pen.
My friend built a farm of those. He has 20 of them in a room. And they're all hooked up. He had to build it himself with like Raspberry Pis and like actuators. But he wrote the letter the first time himself and then scanned that in. And so all these machines, it goes down the conveyor belt, writes it, sends it off to the next one, and they just sign it at the end.
Wow.
It's mind-blowing.
I need a video of that. It's pretty amazing. Yeah, I mean, so you can either build it yourself or some software exist in the world, services, but... You know, ultimately, it's like the things that really make a difference just don't scale at all.
Yeah.
It's the Bonjoro app that you can create a custom welcome video for every single person who becomes a new customer. You know, and Bonjoro is, you literally take your phone and make a quick video and you say, "Hey, Keith, thanks so much for joining us." And, you know, I noticed that your site is on WordPress and we can do these things and, you know, whatever it is, like, creating that little custom video and sending it, that makes a difference.
Yeah. Right? And it's interesting because I find that the parts of, you know, we do the lumpy mail or that welcome video, the parts that are the hardest are the things that can scale, right? Like recording a video, if I had a little message that came up and said, "Hey, record this video for John, here are his details."
Yeah.
That's easy to do. Record the video, done. But the problem is that, okay, I have to get that data. Then I have to record the video. Then where do I send it? Someone uploads it. And it's all that part that I think is what makes people not do this, right? But that's the easiest part to scale. Like the hardest, it's funny because with our lumpy mail, the hardest thing was figuring out how to get the t-shirt size and then actually getting the address to come and be printed on my printer.
Right.
That's the hardest part, is printing out the address. Everything else is super simple. Mm-hmm. Like, why is that the hardest part?
I don't know. There's part of me that's like, is it the hardest part, or is it a really convenient way to
scapegoat,
delay
right.
doing something, right? Because, I hear this a lot too with like onboarding flows. It's one of the reasons that I created the dinner party strategy. And when I shared it at MicroConf a couple years ago, people said, like, "Thank you for a framework on this, because I literally have nothing because I didn't know where to begin."
Mm-hmm.
And so as human beings, we'd rather do nothing than something.
Right.
So I feel like sometimes it is actually the hardest part, you know. I know people who would rather spend 3 months choosing an ESP than just picking one and sending emails from it. So
yeah, I was talking with a couple of friends, and we were talking about default modes, right? So when we don't want to do something, what is the work task, the productive task that we fall into that we want to do? So for me, it's programming. Like when I want to step away from everything, I don't want to send out emails. I don't want to talk to people. It's just, I would rather program. Mm-hmm. And for him, it was research. He doesn't want to write the book. He just wants to research, right?
And research,
Yeah. And it was interesting to me because I never thought of it, because there are things that we do that are still productive, but they're the productive things that we do to escape from the things we know we should do. Those, even if it takes 10 seconds to do, we have such a barrier to do them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing. Like, and that carries over into so many areas of your life. So I feel like maybe tackling it on a really small scale will help you, help you over time. And like, instead of emptying the dishwasher so you can reload it, you just let the dishes pile up in the sink and think like, I'll wash those by hand.
I see you've seen my sink.
But, you know, and I actually had this debate with myself at one point. And then I set a timer for emptying the dishwasher. And I didn't like do it as fast as I could or anything. It took me 7 minutes. It took me 7 minutes to empty the dishwasher when I had then created like 30 extra minutes of work for myself and not doing it, right? So I think you can tackle it in small areas of your life and you'll start to see it carry over into your work.
Yeah. And I think part of running a business, and one of the lessons that was taught to me that I really have really tried to take to heart, is there are people who enjoy the work that you hate. And for me specifically, support is one of them. I love getting on calls. I love talking to people, but the sending an email or responding to an email is so stressful. I once took 3 hours to respond to an email. It took me 5 minutes to actually write the email, but I would sit down. I went and got a cup of coffee. Sat down. Oh, got to go to the restroom. Yep. Sat down. I'm kind of cold. Let me go take a shower. Sat down. And like 3 hours later, I finally write the 5 minute email, right? Well,
that's the writer's process for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My husband is my business partner. He runs all the operations, and he was working on some tax stuff the other day, and I looked over at him and I said, "I'm sorry." He's like, he goes, "What are you talking about? I love this stuff." And I was like, "Okay, good, because I hate it." That's why I'm saying I'm sorry, because if you were me, I would be miserable. But you're not miserable. You think it's fun.
Yeah, there are people who like managing Excel spreadsheets. I'm not one of them, but there are people who love it. Yeah. For anything, pretty much any job, there's probably someone who would love to do it.
Which is all the more reason to, like, you know, delegate. Expand your team and hire individual experts and things, right? Like they can contribute in places you can't.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, Val, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. Anything kind of closing thoughts or any pieces of wisdom you'd like to, not to put you on the spot?
No, I think like the biggest takeaway. So there's kind of two things that I think are important from our conversation. And one is, you know, something is better than nothing, like do something. And then two is to ask why more often, dig into the data that you have and figure out why. Don't just look at a churn number and say, well, that's our churn and we need to fix it. Like, do we need to fix it? And if so, what are the 7 different things that go into that we can fix one thing at a time?
Yeah. And I think to me, I think that's a key part of this, which is asking why. And I think not enough people either do ask why or know how to ask why for the data that they're getting.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to channel your inner 3-year-old and just keep asking why.
Yeah. Well, Val, people can find you at Twitter at @LoveValGeisler. And at fixmychurn.com, we'll put both those links in the show notes. And I just want to say thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Boom. All right. That was super fun. I enjoyed that.
Yay. Yeah, it got a little philosophical, but, you know, it's all right.
That's the best way. It's actually funny because I've had 3 people over the last month, I think, tell me, hey, do you know Val? You should really talk to her about Segmetrics and your SaaS. And I was like, I actually have a call with her.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad. I think that we're in a couple of Slacks together. To do this finally.
Yeah. I had realized because I chatted with you a number of times in the Slacks and I your name keeps popping up and on Twitter and everything. I'm like, wait a minute. I don't think I've actually ever talked to Val. Maybe I should do that.
She's on my schedule. Yeah. I'm glad we made it work. And I'm glad Kai was persistent in getting me on the schedule. The end of the year, I was super burnt out on podcasts. Like I was doing 3 interviews a week and it was just exhausting. So I needed a little break. So thanks.
No worries. Yeah. And I didn't realize I was dead in December. Just completely dead. I thought I was going to do work over the break. Nope. No. Not at all.
So. Good. You needed it.
Are you coming to MicroConf?
I actually was just telling Amy, I don't think I can. The week prior is my kids' spring break. And we are experiencing the torture that is the week after a break, because they just had winter break and then they went back this week.
Got it.
And they're just, my kids are so regimented with their, you know, they need a schedule and routine. And So this week has been really hard, and I don't want to leave my husband alone with them. It's not fair to anybody involved. So Amy and I were just talking about that because she's heading out there. And
oh, is she going to go? That's awesome.
Yeah, I was really hoping to make it, but it just really doesn't make sense. Like, it's not worth it. Yeah.
I was not planning on going, but then Rob guilted me into it, so I actually do need to go.
Yeah, they asked me to speak at Starter, and so I was going to come and check out both, but I don't know. Maybe I will just maybe fly in and out for the day of speaking, but I certainly won't be there for like a long
time. The whole time, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully I get to see you. I still need to get my ticket and make a final decision, but I'm probably going to go to Growth. And
cool. Think, yeah. You said that because also that Saturday is my oldest 6th birthday.
Oh, wow.
So, okay. Yeah, so Xander was like, well, you could do early on the first day because Starter is the second half of the week.
Right.
So maybe I'll come to the crossover party and then the speak that day and then fly home that night.
Be good. That's what happened to me last year, because they had it right on both of my kids' birthdays. So they were born 2 days apart. And
oh,
so
great.
And it was right then I was like, what you doing to me here? Like, yeah. Not going. Yeah.
Yeah. The other one that I was asked to do, Really Good Emails has a conference called Unspam, and it's my other daughter's birthday. So sorry, guys.
Yeah, Create, which looks like an amazing conference down in Tempe, I think, is right during my kids' birthdays this year. And I was like, I really want to sponsor this. I want to go down there and have a booth. But
when they say kids ruin everything, they don't mention this part.
Yeah, the birthdays. It's like, you had a birthday last year. Do you really need a 10th birthday? Right. I don't think so.
We're like, you just had Christmas.
Right. Like, you have Christmas, and then you don't need anything else. Yeah. All right. Okay, well, I will, speaking of which, I will let you go pick up your kids.
Okay. And so thank you.
And I will talk to you soon.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Have fun.
Bye.
Bye.